This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. I am actually here today. Wow, indeed. We have had, of course, our usual exceptionally fun and wonderful lineup of brand new to you shows. We've got one more for you coming up here tomorrow on a New Year's Eve with Dolores Pringle from the Penn Center, as well as others. We're looking forward to that. So it's been a lot of fun. We hope you've enjoyed those. Live here today, I got a lot to get to today. Actually, a shockingly large amount of things to get to today. Once again, tomorrow, brand new to you show. And then we are back on Monday. Oh, we hope you're having a wonderful New Year's. Patrick is here. Patrick, how are you, my friend? Did you have a nice holiday?
It was really good. How was yours?
I did very well. Gone on out. I did the Glow Festival over at the State Fairgrounds. That was nice. Took a tumble out there. I came out of the Santa exhibit right down. Whip! Now, I wasn't even on the slide. First of all, I'm going to be honest with you. I wasn't drunk enough to get on that slide. I'm not going to go down that. I mean, it seemed a little bit like, well, can you sign this waiver? Oh, really? Okay, no, I'm not going to do that then. But got out there, lovely to see the lights out there. Went back to the Walker Art Museum yesterday. I was at the MIA a few days ago. Just a nice time getting out and doing some things. Going to be staying inside. As a matter of fact, coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, Sven Sundgaard's going to stop on by. Talk about this really cold spell that we're going to get for New Year's Day. We'll talk about that. We're going to miss the snow. That sounds like it's going to head south of us. We'll talk about that later. But since it is our last show of 2021, thank God, another year we can get rid of. And this is kind of a tradition here. It's time for Jeff. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. You can find his books over at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com, the Iowa Business Report, especially if you like business with a little side of the ag side of things and see how things are going. The Iowa Business Report is his daily show he does down there. And, of course, the Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. And Jeff joins us for his annual, usual end-of-the-year review. Hi, Jeff.
I'm a little upset. I had to sign a waiver before I did your radio show. What do you mean you're not going to sign a waiver to do the slide down the hill?
Do you know? Okay, so if you want to start with the Matt McNeil year in review, not only did I have a hip replacement surgery, I had a kidney condition that nearly killed me. So you know what? I don't need to get down. I'm 53. I don't need to get on an inner tube and bounce my way down an ice hill. I'm cool. I'm good. No, I've done that. I'm all right with that. How about you, Mr. Stein? Are you willing to go on up there and bounce your way down?
There is not a chance. It is not, because here's the thing. I have my own issues.
Yeah.
God knows I have my own issues. I don't have a kidney issue.
Okay.
I have not needed a hip replacement.
All righty.
And I have a feeling that if I did just go bouncing my little body down the hill, I would need a hip replacement. I would have a kidney. It's like, why pick something up? Why push my luck? So, no, I'm not going. I had someone today. There is a facility for those who have physical limitations called Camp Courageous in Iowa.
So, yeah. Okay.
They have now installed a zip line, and it is this huge zip line. And a person who uses a wheelchair said to me today, oh, I can't wait for the summer. I'm going to do the zip line. What about you? And I said, there is not enough money you can pay me to do the zip line. You want to do a zip line? You go help your darn self. I am just sedentary as all get out, and I'm good with that.
I came out. I was over at the Glow Festival at the fairgrounds in St. Paul. I came out of the Santa Hut, which actually had was cool because it had some of the old Macy's eighth floor, Dayton's eighth floor decorations in there. I came on out right down. I went. I know it sounded bad because my wife and my daughter are immediately like, "Oh my God, are you okay?" That sort of thing. And I'm like, "All right, I'm fine. Pride, all this stuff." But I'm at the point now where people are like, "Oh my God, he fell?" You know, and it's that's not a good place to be. I mean, it's and the next thing you know, it's like, "Oh my, you want to actually walk to the restaurant?" I mean, okay, stop. I mean, I'm not there yet.
Okay, there are two things. First of all, you were kind enough to send me a holiday card.
Yes.
And you have a family tradition where you have the whole family. It's a beautiful photo. You outkicked the coverage when you married her, and luckily the kids favor her side of the family. But it's a beautiful family. But the other thing I noted, I mean, that's true. It's a beautiful family. I always like getting the card. But here's what I noticed. It's like the kids are kind of around you, like, holding Dad up. It almost looked like, I'm supposed to be led to believe that you have your arms around your loving family. They're holding you up.
Oh,
right?
God, it is. It really is. It's kind of like the facade is gone. It's, here he comes. Get him propped up here. Get the rope and pulley system so he doesn't go down. It's like a Macy's Thanksgiving Day for Lade balloon at this point.
Well, with a windstorm coming down Fifth Avenue, but the problem is this is what I get at home a lot. Well, since you fall down a lot, it's like, wait, what?
Since...
Well, first, define a lot, you know. It's because I'm older than you are, and it ain't any fun.
Well, hey, by the way, just keep an eye out, too. I got you one of the calendars, too. That's going to...
Oh, you're kind man.
That's heading your way there. And this time, in time for 2022. All right, so... As we get ready to end this year,
yeah, let's do.
This is the year America woke up and said we slept with who, and it really kind of, I mean, I know that sounds like, you know, a little bit kind of snarky, but it really was, and I think it because we started out with an attempt to overthrow the democracy of this country. Perpetrated, I mean, and the more we learn about it, it's clear this was not just some random people. This was Trump, his administration, members of Congress, a lot of his enablers. This was a coordinated overthrow of the government attempt. And it was, and it's not just Democrats. There's a lot of Republicans like, what just happened? And there just was this the entire year. And of course, coronavirus sticking around. This was a year of malaise, to say the least.
Well, I have looked. This is the time where you look back at 21 and you look ahead at 22. All right. Usually, we can say, "Well, there. That's the end of this year. This is the start of the next." Well, the issues broadly that we have right now, they're going to carry over. There is no neat little end to the year. We've had some years where it's going to be a change in the makeup of Congress. Let's say. And it goes from one party to the other just after the first of the year. There was one year where they passed a budget on New Year's Eve or something. I mean, there are certain things where you can actually say this was this year, this is this one. 1999 into 2000. You know, these kinds of things. But this is just a morphing. And the key issues that we faced in 2020 became the key issues in 2021 because of COVID. And the same ones carry over into 2022. And so... it is just this continuous slog, if you will. Now, the distinction is the one that you made because we don't really have the answers with regard to January 6th. Now, you might say that the American people woke up in late 2020 and said we slept with who because of the election, right? And so in that case, well, even that carried over into this next year or into from 20 into 21. Here's the thing that is going to be pivotal for 2022. And it is how credible the average citizen finds the things that the January 6th committee comes up with.
Yeah.
Because they are working on I know you've discussed this on the program, I'm sure we have not, but so I'll bring it up as if it just occurred to me. with apologies if you've talked about it to death, but they are, the committee is now looking at members of Congress.
Yeah.
Because there's a constitutional provision that bars you from holding office if you've led an insurrection against the government you then pledged to serve. And that is why there is such attention, not just because right is right, there is such attention being paid on people like Jim Jordan and others, because there's going to be this move to say, if you were a ringleader, if you orchestrated all of this, then by gosh, we're going to make sure you can't hold elective office again as a midterm election comes about. And they're going to be the test case for Trump, because it's a very different situation when you're talking about a chief executive voted into office different ways. That was why the Democrats wanted to impeach him in the House a second time, why they did do it, but that's why they pushed to do it, with the hope that there could be a Senate trial, because if he were to have been convicted in the Senate, then he would be barred. There, that's one of the real solid angles, and why you're seeing so many of these Republican congressmen not wanting to have this explored very deeply, because it's their own political careers at stake. And that goes back, finally, to your basic point. They slept with who they slept with for the power, for access. The minute they thought they could get rid of Trump, as in, looks like the election's not going his way, oh, sorry, you know, we're done with it. January 6th, even his most ardent followers, Lindsey Graham, of all people, said, that's it, I'm done. Well, he's obviously not done, and none of the others are done, because Trump doesn't go away, and he'd still win the nomination. Everything we've been talking about aside, he'd still win the nomination if the convention were today. And that's the problem for Republicans, is that usually somebody loses and goes away. Not so much here.
And by the way, you bring up the point. I thought it was very interesting and very pointed that Liz Cheney was the one that responded to Trump today in regards to his lie that basically the House, the 1-6 committee is not looking and seeking his documents anymore, which is, I don't know what he thought he was getting away with, but Liz Cheney said, oh, no, we're getting them. when you look back on, I want to bring up two points of history. I mean, obviously, the penultimate historical uprising against the government was the Civil War, obviously. The Southern states fighting the United States of America, with the U.S. winning after 4 years of bloody battle. That's not debatable. There have been other attempts, Whiskey Rebellion, the Smedley-Butler affair at the beginning of the FDR administration, which are definitely remembered, recognized, taught in history classes. But when you look at what happened on 1-6, It's pretty remarkable that you were going to have a president who was impeached twice, and that's not what the first thing that they're going to remember him for. They're going to remember him for this attempted overthrow of the country. And as much as he's trying to wipe the stink off of him right now, it's clear that that it was all about him and what was going on. The fact that we now know from Meadows that we talked about a few weeks ago, that you know, everyone was frantically calling and saying, for God's sakes, go tell him to stop this. And he wasn't. And I think that as more of this comes out, I think you're right. It's going to be an interesting year in 2022 on how this resonates. But the reality is there's it's the only option that his enablers and the right-wing media, namely Newsmax, OAN, and to a point, and even to a point Fox News, the only way that they can get around this is just to not even talk about it. And that's what I think is going to eventually happen. Is the question here is will the people that follow him just not hear about this enough to where it will be negated?
Normally, I would say that regardless of what the January 6th commission comes up with, commission, committee, I don't know, potato, potato, whatever they come up with, Trump followers can dispute it and dismiss it out of hand, Matt, because, well, our guys weren't allowed to be on the committee. You know, they wouldn't let Jordan on there. They wouldn't let whomever. And then, so it's a rigged deal. You can get away with doing that. But here's where Trump can't get out of his own way. And this is something we've talked about now for, what, 6 years overall. Trump's going to have a news conference on January 6th.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I cannot understand why Nancy Pelosi wants to have a commemoration either. Okay, but that's a whole different issue. I'll deal with that in a second. You're Trump. Why in the world would you have a news conference on January 6th? It makes no bloody sense to me whatsoever. Now, again, I don't understand why the speaker would want to do it. I'm not sure what the commemoration would be. I just don't understand why anybody would want to go there right now in the midst. Let the committee do its work. Let the committee do its work, come out with its findings. Those who are prone to ignore that kind of stuff because it's a rigged deal, they're going to ignore it no matter what. Those who are hyperpartisan the opposite way, they're going to read double into it. But the muddy middle of America could look at that objectively if the rest of the histrionics don't overtake things. And so instead of actually getting the meat, I mean, we're talking about specifics. You and I talk about specifics that are coming up to the committee. But most folks are going for the glossy show of, oh, there's Nancy, black dress, the one she wore for Trump's impeachment, and she's going to preside over this. And then, oh, no, let's see what Trump does with his news conference. And it's all the sideshow. And that's really unfortunate because I know why Trump's doing it. He's just going to do the I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. I don't think it's a good idea. But Pelosi's doing it to get in the way of the committee.
Well,
that could help.
I'll just say everything. I mean, you commemorate the police officers that were attacked. And because, I mean, let's face it.
Fine.
And let's just, you know, there are a handful of Capitol Police officers who are a major reason this country's democracy did not fall, that held back this unruly mob.
Some of these are never going to be the same.
Yeah, and a lot of them are going through a lot of mental anguish. If you want to sit there and say, I don't know why Nancy Pelosi is doing this, I know exactly why Nancy Pelosi is doing this. And it's, I think it's to commemorate them. And whether or not you want to be, you know, really political and just say, well, it's for her to remind people of who was really attacked that day and what really did happen. Fine. But the reality is that we have not done enough to commemorate those police officers who did stand in the way. I mean, the one guy, that image that's going to be the image of the year, where the one police officer, the African-American police officer, is sitting there with his hand out saying stop to an unruly mob of white people. That we do need to remember that. And as at the end of the day, that's one of the major stories here that is covered, that needs to be remembered, is that there was a handful of Capitol Police officers who basically stood out there and stopped that mob.
I have no problem with anything you just said. Here's the problem I have is her manner in going about it. I don't know why you announce a big thing. You can do it. You should do it. But potentially it should be a speech from the well of the House to say it was 1 year ago today that democracy was threatened in this very chamber, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I had been reading, and I'm perfectly willing to be wrong and may well be, but what I was reading is that she was planning something much more grandiose. People who put on a uniform, we cannot thank them enough in so many contexts, all right? Certainly Capitol Police that day. Those who are fighting overseas at various points, okay? So I have no problem with that. I'm having a little problem with how much of it is more of an orchestrated show as opposed to purely a show of support.
Yeah.
I'm fine if that's the purpose. I'm afraid it's getting a little tugged, and I think that diminishes the sacrifice made by the Capitol Police.
One person is still in office. The other person isn't. I mean, there's your validation right there. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back, because in the wake of this, both parties are having a lot of infighting. We'll talk about that as well. It's Jeff Stein joining us for a year in review. Look ahead to 2022. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us, year in review, and look ahead to next year. Jeff, this year, I will start with this because we just got a short segment here. I want to get into the Democrats first. The problem they seem to have, and this is something you and I have talked about, when you have a political party where Bernie Sanders and Colin Peterson are supposedly under the same umbrella. That's just too wide of an umbrella. And yeah, you cannot have a – and we are seeing the problem that they have. I mean, they're too quick to gobble up anyone that came out of the Republican Party, didn't realize how wide their umbrella was getting. And now they're trying to pass policy, and people sit there dumbfounded because they get Sinema and Manchin, who, you know, Sinema clearly is bought off, but Manchin, who is, you know, well, also probably he's got one coal baron pulling his chain. But I mean, it's at the same time they're kind of surprised, like, okay, why is not policy resonating when you're basically got the old moderate Republicans all the way to socialist Democrats under one umbrella?
I only snickered because those were tremendous examples. Here's Colin Peterson. Here's Bernie Sanders. Yeah, what do they have in common?
Nothing.
Party identification, and, well, actually, with Bernie, not even that.
No,
this was the problem, and it happens a lot in governing, right? When the whole idea is to say, let's beat this guy, and in this case it was Trump, even though we're talking about the House here, but when the whole idea is, let's get Trump, all right, they got him. Now what? You know, when Biden got the nomination, we seem to forget that a lot of candidates pulled out all of a sudden at the same time and threw their support to Biden as part of a Stop Bernie movement. So you get this coalition together, and they find that once they have fulfilled the goal of getting Trump, they don't have enough in common to govern. And that's been part of Biden's problem. He's president, but it was such an odd patchwork, a coalition that got him the nomination. Now everybody wants their due, and they can't agree on the basic things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fundamental point, lastly, of legislating is you figure out what you can do, get it done, and then move on to the other things. And there is one wing of the Democrats now who say, we've got the numbers, we have the majority, go for everything. Go big or go home. Half a loaf is not better than no loaf at all, and that's where the problem is right now. The margins are too slim for them to have as fractured a coalition, and that makes it just darn difficult to govern, which is difficult on a good day.
Well, and it also should be mentioned here, I mean, the Republicans don't have this problem because they are such a unified. And one of the problems, and I mean, I know this is something I'll always get brushed back from Democrats when I say this, but it's the truth is sometimes they are too accepting of differing opinions, and they love to have this differing opinions, and they pat themselves on the back of they have all these differing opinions, but then when it comes time to actually pass legislation, you've got too many differing opinions. And once again, the Republicans can pass, and whether it's, you know, in the most obscenely far right bill, and yet every Republican swims in the same direction. Very rarely do they ever get out of line. I'm not necessarily for that, but I at least think the Democrats should put out a standard that says, if you are going to be a Democrat and run under the Democratic banner, you have to be for this, 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 and this, and that's just the deal. And if you're not, then you're not a Democrat. And I think it would serve their party pretty well to at least create some base standards.
Well, and of course, the Republicans that you might talk to about this would say, well, John McCain certainly, you know, dot, dot, dot. Okay, fine. But here's the point. When you have such tight margins, what is it, 6 votes in the House, tie vote with tiebreaker in the Senate, it's darn difficult to get anything done, anything huge, okay, to get anything huge done. I believe the National Medal of Honor Memorial Monument on the National Mall, I believe that passed just before Christmas unanimously. Okay, get that kind of stuff done on ones where maybe it's 75-25. You know, frankly, the bipartisan infrastructure bill is another example. Keep it to the point that you can get things done. Because this idea of leveraging massive bills with so many different components, there are just too many tentacles when the margin is so tight. And, you know, Republicans are having a whale of a problem right now trying to expand their tent, especially when it comes to LGBTQ issues, because here's the thing. The RNC is pushing aggressively to recruit Hispanic and LGBTQ. And the problem is the far-right conservative Republicans are alienated by this, but the National Party doesn't care because, as they say, where are those other guys going to go? Right? Where are they? They're not going to become Democrats. Where are they going to go? Well, they're going to go home. It's what
yes.
they're going to do. And so at least with the Democrats, you've at least had some agreement on coalitions.
Yeah.
And the trick is they just didn't sit down enough past their hatred of Trump to figure out what can we actually do going forward?
Let's take a break. Come on back. Let's get into the Republicans, because they actually got a far more fascinating divide starting to form there. Joe Biden, we'll talk about his year, as well as also we'll look ahead towards 2022. Jeff Stein joining us for a good chunk of this hour. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein talking the end of 2021, the beginning of 2022. Jeff, in the aftermath of the 1-6 riots, insurrection, there is an interesting thing, especially, and I'm going to guess in the last 3 months, about that has started to develop within the Republican Party. And nothing highlights that more than what happened in Kentucky. Now, obviously, tornadoes tore through Kentucky, wiped out some western Kentucky towns. As you talked about things that, you know, rarely get universal support, even, you know, all the people were like, OK, send it in the federal government. Let's fix this town. Let's fix these people there. Mitch McConnell, who put aside his disagreements with Biden, was very congratulatory and very appreciative, was very openly supporting of Biden and his help he was giving Kentucky. Even Rand Paul was coming on out there. Joe Biden is on the street, and someone screams, "Let's go, Brandon." Now, the thing which is bizarre about that is there's a very decent chance that person's entire life has been wiped out, and Joe Biden is there to try to help, and it didn't matter. There is this belligerence which is now starting to permeate and percolate out of the way, where that even if Joe Biden was the fire department showing up to put your house out on fire, that they'd say, "I don't want him doing it. I'd rather watch my house burn," and they'd sit and smile. And the reality is if the Republican Party becomes, and I'll say it, the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Republicans are lost, and they are not going to be able to recover if that ends up being the main driving point. That kind of mentality is the deciding factor within that party.
There are people who say and do things out of desperation. So if you're someone who just lost everything, I don't trust your reaction at all. But again, why would you go out of your way at that point to say anything? This is the point, and I'm not forgetting your main point here, but I mean, this is what I don't understand about people, especially social media, which is about as antisocial a creation as ever.
Agreed.
But, I mean, you know, let's say, for example, I'm going to change some of the names here, but let's say I was filling in for Matt McNeil.
Okay.
All right? God forbid the audience would go away in droves, all right? But let's say I'm filling in for Matt McNeil, and I post on Twitter, "Hey, filling in for Matt McNeil, who's a little under the weather." The number of people who would reply all, or, you know, would post a reply, make sure everybody was included, to say, "I hope he has COVID and dies," you know. Why? Why would you take a brain cell and do that? It's not like the people who are the subject of it are going to know about it, are going to care. What benefit is there to you to focus on a negative thing like that? But there are so many people who do that. And that's the thing that when our so-called leaders condone it and encourage it, that then sends a very bad signal. I mean, you should have enough respect for the office of the president to not yell something derogatory when he's surveying storm damage. I don't get the whole point of that.
Or, by the way, now, and we should mention, or on Christmas Eve, when they're taking calls from the family members, and basically some idiot from Oregon yells this, on Christmas Eve, on a Christmas call. I mean, there is, but that belligerence, though,
seemed like a knucklehead.
Oh,
he
yeah.
just seemed like a complete knucklehead, all right?
Yeah.
But how do you get past the sentry, in essence, right? I mean, how did they pick this family for a call? And if he was, like, just making a joke, why would you say that? I don't understand.
Exactly.
There's another longer – well, I'll just tell the short part of it. My email list gives me the stuff from the White House pool. And the first I heard of it was the subject line said, caller says, "Let's go, Brandon." I'm like, what the heck? And I'm sitting there working at home. And I open up the email, and the reporter said that the caller, said, let's go, Brandon. And this is what he wrote. Biden appeared to ignore the slight and moved on. Well, that's not what happened.
No.
Right? I mean, the president responded in a way that led folks on the right to have a field day. And then they wound up, a different reporter corrected it. And it's like, okay, now wait a minute here. This is just getting way too crazy here about things. If we don't have good information that we can trust on all sides, how in the world are we going to be able to shout down the idiots? Now let's talk about Marjorie Taylor Greene. You see how I just kind of slid right in on
that? Well, but you see, that is a legit. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I mean, that used to be, there was a guy, Washington Post had a story about the guy. He said, I carry a flag that says Trump won. When he was coming down to help out with damage, he took the flag down because I didn't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell didn't want to be that guy. I don't want him coming here, even though we're tornado damage. He didn't want to be that guy. But the reality is that there is this element of the Republican Party that loves being that guy, that Christmas doesn't matter or tornado damage doesn't matter. The well-being of their families doesn't matter as long as it's I hate you all the time. That is just unbelievable. And this is not going away within the Republican Party.
Well, and that's the thing, where there are enough outlets these days that anybody can get a voice. And that's one of the problems, all right? Because, for example, if you go back to, Grandpa here in the rocking chair, if you go back to the old days, even at the beginning of cable television 40 years ago, all right, there was a sense of balance. There was a sense of neutrality. Now, you may say, well, we now know that Cronkite was a liberal. Yeah, but a lot of people couldn't figure that out on the air.
Nope.
Most people couldn't, or he couldn't have had the career he had, all right? Well, now everything is so fragmented and so niche-based that you can be Newsmax, One America News, what's the other one, Real America's Voice. You can be one of these outlets and outfox Fox to the right and then just keep going, because all you have to do is buy time on the satellite. Right, there's an infinite amount of spectrum if you're willing to pay for it. And so there's no filter for balance. And I dare say, if you tried to put a balanced program on the air, you'd have a hard time getting an audience. Because we've now conditioned a whole generation or more that the way you get information is not to consume a variety of viewpoints and determine what's right. It is to only hear that which you are predisposed to agree with in an echo chamber. And that's not a good recipe for democracy. And the whole point is, people who would never get a sniff in the old days now have millions of followers hanging on their every tweet.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that that's proving to be such a good thing.
When we bring up the point you mentioned earlier about Republicans staying home, and when you look at this in the micro niche of the Republican Party, if they can't get this under control, because Marjorie Taylor Greene is not the Republican Party, I'll be the first to say it. She's representative of that Michelle Bachmann side of the party, and they people love her. But in a vacuum, because you have the traditional leaders, well, A, they've moved further to the right than they've ever been in that party. But as B, they're just not willing to go on out there and bash on Trump like, they've seen what happened to Liz Cheney. They don't want to go down there. As long as there's that vacuum, that still exists. If this in 2022, if the Republican Party becomes the party of Marjorie Taylor Greene and this Trump kind of idealism, they're not going to win back the House. They're sure not going to win back the Senate. And they're going to set themselves up for failure. Now, it might be a good thing for them, because then in 2024, they might be able to shake that away from them. But right now, they're already salivating over winning. And I got news, if it's going to be, Mo Brooks, Louie Gohmert, and Marjorie Taylor Greene, they might want to think that they've got pull. But the reality is, in a lot of areas, especially suburban areas, which lean Republican, they are going to get destroyed.
Here's the best thing for Democrats right now. The number of Republicans who have talked about this landslide red wave, and they're going to have massive majorities by this time next year. Because, first of all, Republicans have shown a propensity for screwing up great opportunities in elections. Okay, they usually come from nowhere by surprise. But when they're sitting here now, it's overconfidence because they think, because they're getting a lot of airplay, that that translates into votes. You know, so again, you cite Lindsey Graham, who apparently just said, oh, we're going to have this massive landslide next year. Show me any evidence to suggest that's the case. And if the best you can do is a poll with a generic ballot, those things have never been worthwhile, never more fraudulent, if you will, than right now. The issue with regard to Republicans is, and I'll take it to something that I heard today. Brace yourself in the chair, because I'm going to throw you a name from the past.
Okay.
Sarah Palin.
Ugh.
I told you to brace yourself. Okay. Sarah Palin said she's considering running for public office again.
Oh, God.
Okay. Now, all of that aside, I should have made sure you weren't drinking a tasty beverage, because I don't want you to have to spray the wall when I said that. But could she get elected today? And that's the point I was getting at. She's saying, you know, I'm thinking for running for office again. Okay, I don't know where, I don't know for what, but you remember in 2008, she was kind of out there. Is she so far, quote, neutral, mainstream, normal in the party that she couldn't get a sniff nowadays? And that just shows you how these things progress, regress, if you will, or at least shift over the course of time.
Yeah, and I will say this, and this is the problem for the Republicans. She probably could win the primary. She probably would not win the general election. And I mean, depending on the, you know, if it was a, you know, a design district for a Republican to win, sure. But yeah.
You have to assume it would be in Alaska.
Yeah.
You have to assume it might be U.S. Senate, et cetera. And remember, she endorsed Trump back in the Iowa caucuses in 2016, 2015 into 2016. But, you know, can she even get the nomination given how far the party has moved?
I don't know. And that's the problem, is that if all of a sudden it's, you know, guys talking about, you know, ivermectin up the backside, is that's your ticket up and down, it's not going to resonate well.
That's a lot to put on a campaign bumper sticker.
Yeah,
ivermectin up the backside. Vote McNeil. I mean, that's just great. I love that.
No, for me. I'm not going to take that one. That's not my campaign. All right, final thing.
Yes,
Biden.
Yes.
Joe Biden, here's the deal about Joe Biden. He's just, I think he came into office, obviously the pandemic, he's still dealing with it. I mean, I find it funny that people are like, I'm not going to get vaccinated, but why isn't this gone away? All right. But at the same time, I think what his first year of presidency is basically surmised, he's having to fix a lot of things. Mm-hmm. He did get the infrastructure bill, which is a good bill. He got that infrastructure bill through, but that's probably going to be, well, it's clearly going to be the end of it for this year. I think a lot of it depends on how quickly they can get – I mean, if we can get this rounded up, if we can get by mid-year, pandemic is basically in the rearview mirror, then I think that he'll be in a much better position to help the Democratic Party come the primaries and come up in the midterms.
Well, obviously, pandemic is a moving target, right? Yeah. I mean, they keep changing the rules of the darn thing with variants, et cetera. I think he overplayed his past experience in this respect. It's a much more physical game nowadays, right? I mean, I think he truly thought, I can just sit down with Joe Manchin and we'll work it out. It'll be fine. And I'm not criticizing him for it. I'm just saying it's now a different playing field. I think he thought, hey, I've done this for 50 years. I'm the guy Barack sent to Capitol Hill to twist arms in the Senate, which he did, right, successfully. Well, now there's a generation removed. There are people there in the House and the Senate who say, Joe who, in essence. They didn't serve with him. They don't have the background. He overplayed, wasn't as prepared for that level of change as he might have been. That's a small little thing, okay? Plus, again, I've only met him a few times for interviews. He seems very much the type who wants to please people. He wants everybody to get along. He'll get feisty on you, but he wants, you know, he's just a very... I don't know, just kind of a welcoming guy, his politics aside. That's not the audience he has there in Washington right now, okay? So I think, though, to your point, the stuff that he's been saying recently with regard to putting a little more onus on states and some of this, I think that is a sign toward. We got to do something to turn the narrative. We got to do something so that we can stem this pandemic because it's a very different variant. that we have right now, and we just have to get people used to what might be a new normal. And if he can accomplish that with different verbiage, like there is no one national solution, a lot of people are, you know, saying he's backtracking, and it sounds like it, but let's see what the nuance is. Let's see what that actually means. Because there are all these governors, Matt, finally, who say, well, you should let me take care of it. By God, I know what to do. You know, do I have a problem with him saying, okay, big shot, you think you know, go for it.
You know, maybe the next thing is going to be finding Ron DeSantis, because he's disappeared off the planet at this point. So that's the next mystery, mystery that's going to happen.
Here's the only thing. He might be dealing with his wife's cancer treatment. I'm not positive on the timing. I think that was kind of part of the current. But
if that was the case, he should be just announcing it. I don't think he's problem with it. He's just not announcing it. So
yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
I'm not going to even ask you to predict the year, because there's too many moving targets at this point. But I will just say this: Happy New Year, Jeff. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time as always, and we will talk to you next Wednesday. And just have a regular update with you then. Okay.
You are one of the best. I enjoy the conversation. I enjoy the friendship. I hope the audience does too.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it. Happy New Year. We'll take a break. Come on back. I got to get the Minnesota coronavirus update in before we get to the top of the hour. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks to Jeff Stein. I got a huge story to start off the next hour, because it's really got a lot of tentacles. I got to get into that. And Sven Sundgaard joining us to talk weather here at the bottom of the 5 o'clock hour. Thursday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 6,780 newly reported cases, 48 newly reported deaths. The state COVID death toll now is 10,516. Tuesday's report includes data that was reported 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Wednesday. Minnesota's test positivity rate over the 7-day rolling average is now at 8.7. It's the same as it was yesterday, but it's been going down, having recently been higher than 11%. Anything over almost 12%. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota on the high-risk threshold, but we're getting better there. Hopefully that trend continues. Through December 29th, the number of people with COVID hospitalized in Minnesota was 1,318, down from 1,348, so 30 less. That was reported on December 28th. Of those hospitalized, 308 people are in intensive care. That's down from 330, and 1,010 are in non-ICU care. That's down from 1,018. Latest hospital capacity shows 34 staffed ICU adult beds available in the entire state. That's down from 38 on December 28th, 15 pediatric beds, which is up from 14 on December 28th. As of December 28th, the state reported that 3,749,205 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,514,952 people have completed their vaccine series, and the state has administered 1,694,923 dose booster shots. So a lot to get through there. By the way, I'm very happy my kids got their booster shots as well. Lots of things canceled for New Year's that they just or postponed because the Omicron variant is very dangerous. And I've been going around. I mean, it's amazing to me. I'll be wearing a mask at places, and the amount of people I see walking around without masks on, I'm like, this is the reason why this thing is going around, especially on the inside. But the Armory, First Avenue, Can Wonderland, a lot of places in town postponing events, closing down for the holidays out of precaution. In the no duck category, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Thursday put a warning for cruise ships on the the issue blunt warning: avoid cruise travel regardless of vaccination status. Currently, 88 cruise ships are being monitored by the CDC because of reported coronavirus cases on board. Happy holidays. The agency does not publicly specify the number of cases on each ship, though. So that's got a little rough. I will say this. There's interesting. Omicron is a Care 11 story. They're saying one of the interesting elements of this one is some of the symptoms are different than other ones. Night sweats are a very common problem with Omicron. Also, some that are more traditional with other flu-like symptoms: vomiting, lack of appetite, nausea, diarrhea. So there are a lot of people I know that are getting, if they think they're getting the flu or getting a cold or a bad stomach bug, and they're ending up finding out they got COVID. So be careful, get vaccinated, wear a mask. Hour two coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Hour number two on your Thursday. And yes, I'm actually in studio today. We are here today. Jeff Stein, we had him in for the year in review last hour. If you would like to hear that, you can podcast at all your favorite sites. We got that up already. Sven Sundgaard will join us today. Wildfires in late December in Colorado. That doesn't seem right. I'll get to that with him. We'll talk weather as well and this big cold snap we're going to be having for the New Year's. But Patrick, have you ever attempted, Patrick, to wander beyond the backside of Minnehaha Falls?
I have not done that, no.
You are a smart man. It's relatively dangerous. You can get hurt. A Minneapolis Fire Department rescued a woman who was seriously injured from deep inside a cave behind Minnehaha Falls. I didn't realize there was a cave back there. Now you're good luck keeping everyone out of there now.
Especially doesn't sound like something I would want to do in winter, unless it's one of those things that you have to climb up the ice to get to begin with. I don't know.
Well, can we point out the fact that there are tunnels and caves on the riverfront where they're deadly. People will go in and there's not enough oxygen and they die. And so I don't know why you're going into any caves at all. I mean, you're not spelunking. You got to be careful with that stuff. But yeah, of course. And also, just in case you didn't realize it, caves aren't paved. According to a news release, fire crews responded to the falls at 5:59 on Wednesday, December 29th. A report of a woman fell in the cave and was hurt. Woman and man were deep inside the cave behind the frozen walls when the woman fell and seriously injured her ankle. They had to basically put her on the stretcher. Well, first of all, you had to require a fire department to go down in there and go in and basically get her out of there so that you'd go to the hospital. What are you doing there at dark anyway? Talk about a bad idea. Ugh, be careful. You don't want to do that. Don't do that. And I understand. Oh, Matt, 53-year-old man. We're young. We're fun. Woo! Yeah. All right. I imagine that was what they were like before they had to get the basically nearly airlifted out of a cave behind the falls. If you're lucky enough that someone can get out there and get help. Be careful. Just be careful out there. 952-946-6205. So, I generally, on this show, I've done this the last few years. We'll come to a bunch of the brand-new-to-you shows. And by the way, I should mention, brand-new-to-you content, we've posted all the interviews that we did on social media, on the streaming sites, on the podcast sites. You can listen to all of the brand-new-to-you interviews. They're available to enjoy. All right? Now, that being said, we always generally do one live show here so we can do an end-of-year review. I like to talk about nothing more than going to the Glow Festival, the magnificent art at the Walker right now, the how pretty the state of Minnesota is. Round up the year, Trump's an idiot. I mean, I'd love to talk about this stuff. But occasionally we do end up having a news story that comes on out where I got to actually do a news story here. Because unless I'm missing something here, the ramifications of this story could be massive. I'll explain. This is a Minnesota reformer story. I think Dina Winter, if I'm not mistaken. At the request of Hennepin County officials, a Medina police officer investigating how an independent photojournalist got photos of Hennepin County Sheriff David Hutchinson's total black Ford Explorer he crashed while driving drunk. The officer, Josh McKinney, visited the home of a conservative journalist, Rebecca Brannon's parents in Eden Prairie. Now, you might remember Rebecca Brannon. She was the one that wrote the story about Carnahan. And discovered the rottenness that was in the Carnahan administration within the Minnesota GOP. She had done this story. She was going to do it for a conservative news outlet. They didn't want anything to do with it and eventually ended up breaking and, broke the Minnesota GOP. That's where, if I'm not mistaken, Rebecca Brannon is most people remember from. She posted photos on Twitter of the county-owned vehicle Hutchinson crashed near Alexandria, according to a recording of a phone conversation with Brannon, provided by the Reformer. It startled me, Brannon said in an interview with the Reformer. I was mostly concerned with my parents because they were worried. They worry so much, I think I was more concerned for them. Hutchinson, who was elected in 2018 with support from Democrats, pled guilty to driving drunk, leaving the state sheriff's conference on December 8th. Brannon has a large following on Twitter, where she primarily tweets about politics and protests. She used to be heavily involved in the state Republican Party, and her day job is videography business. She produces videos for churches and candidates, including a launch video her company produced last summer for Bloomington police officer Jay Hansen. I think Jay is, that's Jay, J-A-I, Jay Hansen, who's running against Hutchinson for sheriff. I'll come back to that. She said it was a 3-day contract. She hasn't done any work for him since. But by your own admission, you have a relationship with a candidate who's running against Hutchinson. Brannon tracked down Hutchinson's mangled SUV while it was parked in a fenced lot behind the Hennepin County Public Works building in Medina. Brannon was there through tips from several sources, including a couple of them from law enforcement. She went there around 10 a.m., drove through an open gate, and took photos. The SUV was unlocked, so she opened the door and took shots of mail, cigarette packages, clothing, a prescription, and business cards strewn about. She also took photos of a nicotine salt vaping device, which she called weed gummies, which were hemp-based gummies, and posted some of the photos on Twitter. A couple days later, McKinley showed up at Brannon's parents' home asking for her. She doesn't live with them. She called the Medina Police Department, and McKinley called her back. According to an audio recording of the Brannon provided to Reformer, McKinley said his boss had been alerted by the county sheriff's office about her photos of the sheriff's SUV on Twitter, and McKinley was called on this day off to find out how she got access to the photos, vehicle, and public works lock. We kind of got involved just because Medina kind of covers a whole area of stuff, so they just wanted us to look into it, McKinley said in the recording. Brannon asked whether she had trespassed or something, because she saw no signs indicating it was private property, not that I can see. Well, I'll get back to that in a second. McKinley said on the recording he looked at surveillance the lot and saw Brannon's SUV follow another vehicle into the lot and go right to Hutchinson's vehicle. Asked how she knew which vehicle was Brannon, it was. Brannon said several sources told her, but she declined to give him names. She said he said he respected her rights as a journalist not to divulge their sources and apologized for inadvertently going to her parents' home. Well, gee willikers, what a change from the fact that the only officer who was punished after, besides Chauvin for murdering George Floyd, was the one that talked to the media. Contacted by the Reformer, McKinley said he couldn't comment, the police chief was out, and that the copy of the police report should be available next week. When McKinley said in the recording that the sheriff's office had asked the department to look in the Brannon, the spokesperson for the county, Carolyn Marinan, said in an email that Hennepin County Administration had made the request, not the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office, to see whether anything inappropriate happened, like trespassing. In light of allegations made in pictures on social media, the county requested that law enforcement agency with jurisdiction, Medina PD, to investigate the matter. Marinan wrote, they conducted an investigation. At this point, they've concluded no charges will be filed. Hutchinson's lawyer, Fred Bruno, and Douglas County Attorney Chad Larson told the Star Tribune Brannon's photos were staged, but Brannon isn't sure what they're alleging. She said she only moved some business cards from the floor to the council to take photos of them. All right. Now, there's a lot to unpack here on this story. There's a lot to unpack here. I first would like to know who was in the vehicle that Brannon followed in. Was that just some random vehicle and she just kind of tucked in behind them? Or was she following someone who was actually taking them in? Because that's my first point. I want to get to the idea that she wasn't trespassing because she said she didn't see a sign. Doesn't mean there weren't signs. And last I checked, your standard public works lockdown impound gate pretty much has no trespassing signs in there. Now, here's where Brannon, where I'll back up Brannon, is that if she was invited in there, well, then she's clearly not trespassing. So it can say no trespassing, but if she was invited, which it sure as hell sounds like she was, invited by law enforcement into this, possibly the person that she worked with, she has a relationship with him. Not saying it is definitive, but there is the possibility that the person who's running against Hutchinson might have helped her get in to take a look at Hutchinson's car. I'm just saying it's a possibility. But the idea that, it's not trespassing, it's an impound lot. It's trespassing. Trust me, that's trespassing. But it's not trespassing, Brannon, if you were invited in there by police, which by the sounds of it, you were. So there, and I'm not going to, and I've got to be honest with you, I'm not going to, there only one really thing I'm going to be critical of Rebecca Brannon on is, because, I mean, she's a journalist. She gets a call from someone saying, would you like to go in there and take a look at the Hutch's vehicle? Of course she's going to go. I think any journalist would go in there. I think she was specifically picked by certain people. My guess would be law enforcement. I don't know. That's just a speculation. But my guess is she was specifically picked because of her political ideology to be the person to go in there, go and do that. But she's a journalist. You get that opportunity, you take the opportunity, especially if you're being invited. And clearly someone did give her information, and she has admitted police were involved. You know, she admitted that she you know, was the police were involved in that. A couple of them from law enforcement. She they asked, how did she know where the vehicle was parked, which vehicle was his? Well, she got several sources, a couple of them in law enforcement. So she, her own acknowledgement is law enforcement has given her the lead, which is going to get back to that in a second as well. So, but I don't have a problem with Brannon. Brannon, though, I do have to make sure you understand something. Your kind of quizzical nature about, what do you mean I staged something? If you moved anything in that vehicle, which by your own acknowledgement said she moved some business cards, if that was, even if that was the only thing you moved in there, which I don't know, I don't know. You're saying you did, but you're saying you acknowledged you moved things in a vehicle which was part of a criminal investigation so that you could take better photos of them. You staged photos. You can argue it. It's the same thing, and I'm not comparing it on the same, the heinous level of it, but it's the same exact thing that happened in Gettysburg after the fighting over there back in the Civil War, that people were going out there, and to get better photos, they picked up some of the dead bodies and staged them. Doesn't mean those people didn't die at Gettysburg, but they didn't die the way that they were portrayed. And so you can sit there and say, what was your word here? Not sure what they're alleging. You did stage them. If you acknowledge you moved evidence inside this vehicle, which you did, you were staging shots. Even if it was just to get a clearer shot, you still staged it. That I'm going to put Rebecca Brannon aside. Let's talk about this just in the sense of Hutch, Sheriff Hutchinson. Let's say they discovered some other evidence here. And I'm going to make up a scenario. Say they discovered cocaine in a bag in one of the vehicle seats. Good luck filing any charges now on that, because someone in law enforcement made the decision to let a reporter into an impound lot, which I'm pretty good at guessing was not standard operating procedure, to open the car door and move stuff around inside the car. Now, I'm not going to imply, this is not about implying Rebecca Brannon did anything wrong. This is about a court of law. And now what you have done is created the ability for anything with Hutch. And now, like I said, I'm not saying that anything else did happen. But say there was another crime that was discovered. You can't possibly prosecute that because we now have evidence that someone who wasn't a police officer was given access to the vehicle and moved stuff around. And I'm not saying that she did anything nefarious. It's the court of law stuff. The judge is going to look, it's like, you didn't keep this vehicle under lock and key. Henceforth, any evidence that comes from this is now tainted. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised. You might even get a case where Hutch might even, you know, withdraw his guilty plea and try to basically say, because you've given her access. How are you going to come on back on that and say anything in that vehicle is legitimate evidence? You can't, because police officers, it sure sounds like, were involved in basically a smear campaign against Hutch. But then let's take this beyond Hutch's vehicle. How many other vehicles are in this impound lot that have been involved in crimes? Let's say we had the carjacking attempts in Edina. Let's say one of the Edina carjacking cars is in that impound lot. right now. How in the hell are you going to actually imply that that vehicle has not been tainted? We have a journalist who says that part of her sources were police officers who might have been helped into the impound lot by police officers, who was able to open up a vehicle and rummage through said vehicle and move things around in said vehicle. This is all stuff that has been acknowledged. This did happen. You're not going to be able to ever say, well, it was only we only violated the protocols with that one vehicle. All the rest of the vehicles in here are perfectly safe. Oh, bull. If there are any other vehicles in this impound lot that are currently in evidence in a trial or just brought in because there's people that are searching for suspects, you've just blown all those cases, you idiots. Seriously, you have just ruined all those cases. Because there is no way in the world you can put that genie back in the bottle. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to come back. This is unbelievable how much of a monumental screw-up by law enforcement this is. Under the guise of just getting Hutch. Sweet Jesus, the implication here is that any vehicles in that impound lot have all now been tainted. Because it sure clearly seems to be that police officers got a journalist in there who was able to open up one of the vehicles and move stuff around. And once again, I'm not implying she did anything wrong. I'm not. Because she was given the opportunity. But how in the world can you say, sure, we violated the living daylights out of that evidence, but the rest of the evidence was never violated. And it goes even further. I'll tell you what. Take a break. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. This is a colossal mess up. Unbelievable. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Okay, so let's repeat what we do know. Rebecca Brannon, journalist, was allowed to get into an impound lot, was told that Hutch's vehicle was, I'm presuming that this is the case. I mean, she's, once again, let's say that what she said. Brannon said there she was led there through tips from several sources, including a couple of them from law enforcement. All right. It shows her, we have video of her driving her vehicle behind another vehicle into the impound lot. Now, she might have just driven in herself, or she could have been following someone under instruction to follow that person into the impound lot. We don't know. That has to be determined. But a non-police officer was able to get into an impound lot, go to a vehicle which was used as evidence in a case, open up said vehicle, move stuff around in said vehicle, and took photos of said vehicle. And a couple of people from law enforcement apparently aided in her efforts to get into this impound lot and identify Hutch's vehicle. And there. Wow. That is monumental. And it's like I brought up, not only is there any other crime involved with Hutch's vehicle that you want to try to prosecute, which is gone. There's no way on the planet a court's going to allow you to, well, we found some other evidence in there. Oh, is this after you allowed the journalist, or, you know, someone in law enforcement allowed the journalist to get into the vehicle, an unlocked vehicle, and rummage around inside of it? Rummage around by saying, by her own admission, moving things around inside of it. Because there's no way in the world the court's going to allow any evidence that you find in that vehicle at this point, because it's not been secure. It's supposed to be secure. It's supposed to be in an impound lot. But then any other vehicle if I'm a lawyer right now and I've got a client who's either going to trial, in trial, been accused of a crime, or even been convicted in this impound lot, I am filing a motion to have the evidence that in that impound lot thrown out. Because you have law enforcement welcoming non-law enforcement to rummage around vehicles in the impound lot. At least that's what it sounds like. And there's evidence of it happening. So, and this even goes, say it's not even a crime, just say a vehicle got impounded. in that impound lot. And I know they say, we're not responsible for anything that dispels the car. Yeah, but you're not supposed to allow non-police officers into the impound lot to rummage around cars. You're not supposed to allow that. I could make an argument, well, I had $20,000 in that car and now it's gone. How are you going to even defend that in court? How would you, if your vehicle was in that impound lot, it's Christmas, because you can basically say anything was in that vehicle. And their argument is like, well, we, you know, sure, someone got in here and looked around and law enforcement helped that person get around and look around at one vehicle, but that was the only vehicle that was compromised. Oh, bull. I wrote a blog piece. I know. I wrote a blog piece yesterday where I talk about how, and something I mentioned a little bit with Jeff, how that we've gotten to the point with the Republican Party where nothing matters, that you can have the president of the United States out there to help people in a tornado damaged area. And likely someone whose entire life has been wiped out, the most important thing for them to do is yell, "Let's go, Brandon." You can have Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve, supposedly this cherished holiday for these conservative rightos. And they get on a call with Joe Biden and he screams, "Let's go, Brandon." They're broke into the core. They can't, there's nothing that matters to them. Their well-being, their finances, their health, their safety, there's nothing. The only thing they know is hate. And it sounds like to me, in this case, you have police officers who hate Hutch so much that they have jeopardized not only his case or any other potential charges, but every other case involved with any other vehicle in their impound lot, because the most important thing for them was to get Hutch. You guys, you officers that apparently helped this journalist get in there, you're the dumbest damn police officers I've ever heard in my entire life. Your desire to get Hutch, get him, your desire to help get Hutch has possibly cost you court cases, lawsuits. What kind of morons are you? I mean, you seriously are stupid. And if you didn't do anything wrong, why are you cowards in hiding? If you didn't do anything wrong, why are you cowards hiding? Dear Lord, you're cops and you screwed that up so bad. Your job is to prosecute crimes, catch criminals, and now you've just given any court case that had a vehicle parked in that impound lot. How do you even argue? Oh, well, police officers allowed that one car, but all the rest of them were secure. Bull crap. And good luck. Let's say I bring back the Edina case. Say it is an Edina carjacker and one of the vehicles is in there. You just got the car tossed. How are you going to get a conviction on a carjacking without the car? Idiots. I'm not a cop, but I know enough about law enforcement that I know that you can't just have this kind of stupidity out there because of what you've just done. You've basically made that impound lot useless. And any vehicle, and like I said, I'll go beyond any crimes. If you got a vehicle that's in there, you can make the argument, hey, there's $20,000 in a bag in the front seat. Well, we're not responsible. Oh, aren't you? Because it looks like law enforcement is just bringing people on through and checking doors. God. Dear Lord. I mean, just on that alone, you could end up costing taxpayers millions of dollars in false claims because you guys can't keep the impound lot secure. Maybe they don't have a sign out there. Maybe they don't. I would be shocked because I can't even comprehend an impound lot not having a sign. It's private property. It's private property, and you don't have the ability to just go onto private property. You know, the city might have it, but they don't allow you to go into the fire department and sit in the fire trucks because you can go in there. No sign saying I can't. This is such a monumental screw-up. the ramifications, the ripples from this decision by some law enforcement to allow a journalist into an impound lot to open up a vehicle, which is evidence in a case, and photograph what was inside and even move stuff around on the inside. How in the world can you – like I said, if I'm Hutch, I actually go back and say, I'll tell you what, I rescind this. And by the way, that car is not part of the – how are you going to get a drunk driving conviction on someone then the car is tossed from the court case? You're going to hope that Hutch has the benevolence to basically agree to, oh, can you take the – how are you guys this bad? I mean, seriously, you guys are morons. I'm not a cop, and I know you guys just screwed up on a monumental level. And if I'm the police, I'm right now going through every vehicle and just – I'll just own it. Yep. Your vehicle was in there, that court case you got coming up, that DUI, that carjacking, that robbery where the car was part of the evidence. Well, it's all been compromised. It's all been compromised because some police officers were more concerned about getting Hutch than they were about doing their damn job. You're pathetic. And like I said, cowards, if you did nothing wrong, then come out and admit it. Oh, what's that? You don't have anything to say? Exactly. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Wow. Wow. There's dumb. And there's, well, holy cow, what were you thinking? And I'd be interesting to find out. Like I said, I'm not saying it is. Be interesting to find out if this officer that Brandon worked with was involved in the information. It'd be very interesting to find that out. Would be very, as a matter of fact, if I was a journalist, that would be the next question I'd be asking. Did you at all help this? Because if he says, well, I'm not going to say. Because it's easy. Either you say, no, I didn't help her. Or you say, I have no comment to make. Oh, okay. It'll be interesting. Like I said, I'm not saying that he did. But, yeah. Interesting. Interesting indeed. And like I said, I want to make sure I'm very clear. Rebecca Brannon, she's a journalist. She gets this land. This landed on her lap. I'll criticize her for not understanding what staging of a crime scene is or photos are. But the reality is someone wants to bring her in to take photos of a crime scene. She's not going to turn that down. I don't know many journalists that would. And this is not her problem. This is the problem of the people that basically started to orchestrate this and put this into motion, which by the sounds of it was law enforcement. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. Sven Sundgaard when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Sven Sundgaard is kind enough to join us on your Thursday as we get ready for New Year's. Patreon is where you'll find his great weather forecast information. And as a matter of fact, I want to once again, if you still are needing a holiday gift idea, the Sven Sundgaard page at Patreon, great weather content that if you are a fan of weather or if you've got someone that likes to keep on top of it, it's a great gift idea. Patreon.com/Sven Sundgaard. Sven Sundgaard, kind enough to join us to talk about the weather. Hi, Sven.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. I saw something that shocked me, and I'm actually starting to wonder how bad this was overall. 20 total tornadoes hit Minnesota. I think that's the official count now, correct?
I believe so. But, yeah, I'm actually in the same boat as anybody else's. Every time I go back and look, there's more. So I'm not entirely sure. Well, but yeah, we know it's over a dozen for sure. It was at 16 at one point, and yeah, there are numerous surveys, obviously in some remote rural areas, and so that keeps slowly adding to the count because it wasn't just within the Twin Cities, you know, the Chanhassen, the Twin Cities National Weather Service forecast area, but also La Crosse. So those two offices have been coordinating that whole southeastern Minnesota area.
How does that compare to a tornado outbreak that might happen, say, in April, May in Minnesota? I mean, is it 20 seems like a lot, and I can't remember, and maybe I'm just being naive, I can't remember the last time I remember a swarm of tornadoes like that.
Yeah, no, 20 tornadoes in Minnesota would be a notable outbreak at any point. And people might remember, if they're at all a weather enthusiast, especially if they like severe weather, a lot of people do, or get excited about it. This was a pretty blah year, thanks to the drought. It was hot, but we didn't have a whole lot of severe weather. So this far outdid anything we had all summer, which is, you know, check off the box in itself right there. So, yeah, this would be a notable event. But in terms of, you asked the questionable, and, of course, I have to throw out there right away, there's no precedent for this even. There's one tornado in December has never happened, let alone 20. So, you know, there's what can we compare it to? Nothing. You can't compare. I don't know. I'm still, you know, 2 weeks later, I'm still mind blown by that December 15th day. It's just, you know, we talked about it on our chat that aired, I think, last week about sort of the climate picture. That this is just off the charts stuff that was impossible without us warming the planet, even a couple degrees, you know, and we have to put that into perspective. I know it's difficult for the average person to understand, well, okay, what 1, 2, 3 degrees doesn't sound like much, but it does have a huge implication for those extreme events.
And 2 points about that. One, that was the interview. We've aired it twice on the Brand New to You shows. And that interview with Sven, where we talk about climate change, that's available on the podcast sites, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and, of course, AM950radio.com. You can find it there. I'll make sure I post that again. But as well as you bring that up, let's go to Colorado right now, where there is it's December 30th. And there are wildfires tearing across Colorado as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
100 mile, and it was it south of Boulder, 100 mile an hour winds.
Yeah.
Oh,
it is, and they're in a snow drought too. I mean, which is not as exciting, but it just gives you a picture of what's going on for parts of the area. We've been on the edge of that beneficiary of very mild air, but it's been even warmer. Basically along the eastern edge of the Rockies, because once you get to the west coast and up towards Alaska, the last couple of months have been colder and wetter than normal. And I was actually out in California last week and posted a little bit about this, but I actually got to see firsthand the incredible amounts of moisture that they've seen. So what's bizarre is Colorado and the Intermountain West lingers into the extreme, you know, multi-year drought that they've been in, and California still is overall too, but they've made up some huge progress just in the last 2 weeks. Parts of the Sierra Nevada have seen over 14 inches of water equivalent in the last 2 weeks. Wow. And of course, most of that's fallen as snow. So you can imagine how much snow that is. And that's more critical actually than rain, let's say, in Los Angeles, because what really fills up the reservoirs in California, and this is true all through the West, is it's that Rocky Mountain snow. You want a good deep snowpack, because in the spring that slowly melts and fills up the rivers, fills up the reservoirs. That is the reason that the Colorado River is so low, that Lake Mead is so low, and all through the West, any reservoir, river, man-made lake, whatever, what have you, is so low, as there's just been this extreme lack of moisture, but also that snowpack. This is the time of year that the West gets their moisture. You know, they have dry and wet seasons. It's different than what we think of as seasons in Minnesota. You get rain or snow in the winter, and then the rest of the year, it just doesn't do a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, you brought up the heavy snowfall. Is it Tahoe? They have parts of Tahoe that they've just closed the roads and said stay home because they can't keep up with it.
Yeah, we had when we were out there, we were going to try to connect with a couple friends of ours who live in L.A. but went to Tahoe for Christmas and couldn't get back because they're stuck.
Wow.
Because that was the middle of that, 3 feet of snow per day kind of event that they had there.
Wow.
Imagine that.
I love how you describe the jet stream, and it's the river. And what I mean by that is that when we go into this winter, what happens is that river kind of starts moving south. And when it's over us, well, we all of a sudden get storms like we have this week. And now it seems like am I crazy, or is that jet stream moved fairly quickly where it was north of us? And now all of a sudden we got storms this week. And now we were looking at the storm that's going to be coming through on Saturday. But now it seems like that river has pushed even further south. And so now, like it was last year, where all the storms went through Iowa, and we kind of got missed by a lot of them. Is that what happened? Are you looking at this as you look at these maps, that river has actually shifted further south very quickly?
Yeah, too quickly. Okay. And, you know, it, normally we want to see a gradual change in the jet stream, or at least it kind of goes, you know, it goes back and forth. It oscillates as it moves south or north. And we just were so incredibly mild where that, you know, the polar jet stream was north of us, and all of a sudden it just dives south. And that's why earlier in the week, last weekend and right up till Monday, it looked like we were in for maybe a good New Year's Day snowstorm, which would be fun. You know, everybody's home anyway or hung over or whatever, just watch it fall. But yeah, then all of a sudden by Tuesday, it was south of us. And that's where it remains, because this blast of Arctic air coming into the weekend now is moving quicker than it looked several days ago. And this is what's still exciting about passing is, as amazing as our computer models and satellite data are, the one thing that can throw it off still for a place like Minnesota is cold air in the middle of winter. It just doesn't catch into the models real well, because the only way to visualize this is to look at where we have automated sensors, surface observing sensors throughout the continent, and it pretty much overlaps with where there are population centers, because they're mostly at airports, whether they're municipal airports or busy international airports. Every airport has to have a weather station, right? Mm-hmm. And you look through Canada and there's this huge expanse. For example, across Manitoba, there you can go hundreds of miles between weather stations. So what happens sometimes is these chunks of cold air don't even get caught by the computer models until they hit a sensor. So sometimes, you know, even in 2021, all of a sudden cold air can just appear, or the speed of it changes because, oh, wait, this thing's bigger and moving quicker than we thought. And if it's under cloud cover, which happens early in the winter, just kind of like November is here, it can be very cloudy. And then our satellites can't pick up how cold the air is under those clouds in the Northwest Territories or over Hudson Bay until it gets into clear air or again, hits one of those surface sensors. So it can make winter forecasting exciting, because sometimes we can see a quick change at a last minute notice until you basically get into southern Canada where we have more sensors.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's coming at us, is this big globule of cold air is shooting down, and that's pushed the river south, and that's why it, you know, it sucks to be Iowa. they're going to get hammered. And it does
or
look
it's
like
good a, to be Iowa. Snow lovers are kind of pissed off, because, you know, it looked good for that one day. We had a foot of snow. We lost it, of course. And then, you know, it looks, you know, last week, at this time, we were looking at Sunday, Tuesday, and then a New Year's Day snowfall, and thinking, wow, you know, we're really going to finally push up that snowpack. And it's just been for the Twin Cities specifically, one disappointment after another. The snow went mostly north Sunday. They had ice and rain south, and even in the Twin Cities, we had that layer of ice over the little snow we had. And then Tuesday snow had a pocket of snow to our north and to our south, but not so much here. And now we're just completely missing the New Year's Day storm. So, yeah, snow lovers would like that. This is, to get back to our first point here, it's just the track of everything moved too quickly, and now we're getting nothing except the cold.
I also want to give you full credit on something. You were the only meteorologist I heard in this town who talked about on that second storm. You were talking about that there is that layer of really dry air. And you said if that stretches into the Twin Cities, that's going to cut our snowfall dramatically. And yeah, that's exactly what seemed to happen. You caught that where, and that's just weird. It's just like low level air pocket that's just really dry, so that anything comes into it just dries and evaporates immediately.
Yeah. Well, so what you got to imagine is these, any area of low pressure in the Northern Hemisphere rotates counterclockwise. And so what was happening is you had that dry, cold air that we saw Wednesday morning, right? Our first sub-zero reading of the season was racing in behind the system. And so you want the perfect timing of having that cold air moving in to push warmer, more moist air up above it to produce the clouds and the snow, but you don't want it to move too quickly, because then it shuts off the whole system, which is why southwestern Minnesota saw almost no snow. But yeah, it moved in a little too quick here, and a couple models did catch that the day before. You're referring to, I showed even some of the forecast, you know, upper air, three-dimensional views of the atmosphere where there was some dry air there. And I said, this could, you know, because I want snow at this point. And I was like, this could be another not so great snow event for us. And it turned out, yeah, 1 to 2 inches here, but north and east of here, that's why north and east, they did see a lot more snow. You know, places like La Crosse and Rochester and into southwestern Wisconsin saw a half foot of snow, and then they saw another half foot in northern Minnesota on top of the, you know, 18 inches that they saw in some places Sunday night.
What is amazing about that is it's, and this is, and one of the reasons why I want everyone to go subscribe to Patreon. That's a great catch. And I think that sometimes I think whether people don't want to make sure you mention something like that because, you know, you want kind of, oh, we want the white Christmas, we want this. And the reality is the science just doesn't lie. And I love how you're a big science guy, and I love that because the science doesn't lie. And if there's that dry air there, it's going to cut it. Yeah, it is not making for the greatest cross-country skiing season yet, that's for sure.
Well, you know, yeah, no, and I'm like, if it's going to be cold, I at least want something to do out there.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise that's when cabin fever really sets in. But, yeah, to that point, so, you know, where I go more in-depth in my subscriber content is I have the time and the leisure to go into explaining all the different model scenarios and, you know, what could happen, because every forecast is a series of scenarios and you're picking up the most probable route. But I think it's important to explain, okay, here we have 10 different possibilities. This is the most likely route, but this could also happen. You know, and that's in defense of your average TV weather person, they only get 2.5 minutes sometimes. So
yeah, true.
you don't have a lot of room to get into anything other than the final numbers.
This weekend, as we get into this, I mean, we're getting this cold blast. You are, though, once again, as the science goes, we need to have an extended cold period for the Minnesota climate to work. Are we going to be getting enough cold here in the next few weeks to where we're going to get those normal temperatures and things are going to kind of get back into cycle?
Yeah, I don't know about that here in the Twin Cities. You know, northern Minnesota, the problem is with these cold snaps is each time, you know, like, yes, yesterday was 7 below zero, but it came 3 weeks later than it would have historically. A century ago, we would have had a number of sub-zero nights by this point, and they would have been colder, of course. This is going to go down as a mild December, not as warm as it could have been, with that middle of the month warmth, thanks to some of this, you know, fourth quarter cold that's coming in. But we just don't get as cold as we used to. And I want to encourage people to go back and listen to our climate talk, as you just mentioned too, because first of all, I go way more in depth as to why we know statistically that December tornadoes are basically impossible other than changing the dials on the climate as we have. But it's the same thing with why our extreme cold has disappeared. We talk a lot about the extreme heat, of course, but when you move the whole pile of data over a little bit, you exponentially add to the extreme warm side of things, and you exponentially chop off the cold side of things. And that's what's happening. You know, I think we talked about in that talk, and if we haven't, I'll mention it again now. But for example, Emerald Ash Borer, you know, the larvae begin to freeze and die when we reach 20 below. Well, that almost never happens in the Twin Cities anymore. And their survival is basically impossible when you reach 30 below. And even that is less and less likely to happen, except for in pockets of course, you know, the Iron Range and parts of northwestern Minnesota. We're not talking wind chill. It has to be the actual temperature because they burrow under the bark. They're fine. Wind chill doesn't affect them. We need actual air temperatures. The Twin Cities hasn't been 30 below since 1996. And historically, I was just talking because my brother is a biologist. His background, this is where we can be fun, and you can either be bored out of your mind or really into the nerdiness of him talking about wildlife ecology and me talking about climate together. Because this is where, if you don't believe the temperatures, look at a moose, look at the Emerald Ash Borer, look at all these other things. The evidence of everything changing is right there. So 30 below zero, for example, it used to happen historically once every 3 years. So it was not a common event, but you could count on every few years, the coldest night of the winter would hit 30 below. Now we're at a once in a 35-year pace. So yeah, it's been 25 years. Statistically, we'd be due for another 30 below in 10 years. So it still will happen. And so that's why, you know, people are like, oh, hey, so much for climate change. No, I'm almost sure we will hit 30 below again sometime in the next 10, 20 years. But it will be once instead of where it should have been every few years. And so, yeah, that's – so when we're looking at things like invasive species, you know, our native ash trees, they can handle an emerald ash borer outbreak as long as it's 30 below every 3 years, wiping out that thing. You're going to lose some, but the majority can handle it. But when we're talking having to wait 10, 20, 30 years for that kind of cold, this is where the biology and climate intersect, and why we see the retreat of certain plant and tree species and invasive species take hold that shouldn't otherwise have to. I mean, it's the part of the problem is we're bringing in a species that shouldn't be here anyway, but then because of the changing climate, it's actually able to survive here.
The kudzu effect. All right. So quickly here, we the weather forecast for the New Year's.
It's going to be cold. and with COVID basically everywhere right now, a really good option to stay in with just your closest family. I posted something about, oh, it's going to be so cold, nobody's going to do anything outside. But I had a lot of people say they plan to do some outdoor events. So obviously that's safe as long as you're bundled up.
Uh-huh.
And have the hand warmers. But yeah, we're talking about it's going to be probably at or below zero by midnight tomorrow night. The wind chill, though, is going to be 15 to 20 below by that point. And we're just not used to that yet, of course. This will only be our second time below zero this season. And then the weekend is just going to be plain cold. Saturday, we'll be lucky to get above zero. I think in the Twin Cities, we might do it by a degree or two, but most of the state will stay below zero. And Sunday morning will be our coldest morning so far this season, coldest since the middle of last February. We're talking the potential for teens below zero, which is an increasingly rare thing to do. You know, in the last 10 years of the most recent, you know, records, that only happens a couple times in the winter. So this could be one of the coldest nights of the whole winter. Unless we're in for a doozy, which I hope we are, because, you know, climate change is scary enough. It'd be nice to have a little normal weather for a while. But regardless, it's going to be cold. But it's short-lived. By Monday, Tuesday, we're back in the 20s already. So, and we all know how that goes. It'll feel like 50 after what we've gotten through this weekend.
Sven Sundgaard, patreon.com/Sven Sundgaard. Sven, thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Sorry. I should mention where there's going to be a narrow area of snow tomorrow, too, along that Arctic front. We're talking about a 50-mile swath of 1 to 4 inches. It looks like it's going to set up between St. Cloud and the Twin Cities, but don't be shocked if it shifts just a little bit. Either way, plan on a slippery, very fluffy, at least half inch of snow along that front that'll happen quick before the cold sets in.
Thanks, Sven. We'll talk to you soon. We'll take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thanks to Sven Sundgaard. We'll post that up online. Reminder, brand new to you show tomorrow, the Dolores Pringle interview from the Penn Center plus others. Make sure you're with us for that. Have a wonderful and safe new year. Please, please, please be back here with us on Monday. Until then, until 2022. See ya.